And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia with Kauai Soapbox, and we've got a really great show today. And one of the people that we have with us here is kind of a world hero. That is Helen Caldicott from Australia, Nobel Peace winner. Helen, are you there?
Yes.
Yes. Yay. So I just have to share with the listeners a little bit about what keeps KKCR on the air. And then I am really happy for you to be talking to the people of Kauai and Hawaii and live streaming on kkcr.org. We're going to talk a little bit about, Korea, Japan, but nuclear impacts and many things on this show. So many guests on the show today. Our first one is Helen Caldicott, and then after that we're going to have some people who work in diplomatic relations with Russian Vladimir Orlov, and then Bruce Allen and Cynthia Lazaroff, who are off to Moscow, in fact, tomorrow. And Helen, thank you so much for being here.
That's a pleasure.
So you're Skyping in from Australia. For our listeners who don't know your amazing history, I probably shouldn't put you on the spot in saying that. I think it's amazing. Can you give them a brief introduction as to who you are and what spurns your passion for?
Okay, I'm a physician. I'm a pediatrician. My specialty is cystic fibrosis, most common fatal genetic disease of childhood. I became involved worrying about the issue of nuclear war when I was about 16, and I read a book by an Australian, Neville Shute, called On the Beach, when everyone in the world was killed by an accidental nuclear war, and the only people left alive were people in Melbourne, which is where I lived. And gradually the radioactive cloud came down to Melbourne, and people gave their babies cyanide so they wouldn't have to die a lingering, horrible death, vomiting and bleeding to death. And eventually, at the end of the book, everyone was dead. And that was the end of the human existence. And that marked my soul. I then went to medical school, age 17, and learned about genetics and radiation. And at that time, Russia and America were testing nuclear weapons in the atmosphere. And I couldn't understand why these men were being so wicked, irradiating millions of people, when they really knew what could happen. And then I went on to practice medicine, have three babies. Got to America in the 70s, was on the faculty at Harvard Medical School, and in 1978, most people I talked to in America said they'd rather be dead than red, and I thought, these people are mad. Mm-hmm. So I organized Physicians for Social Responsibility, and we started teaching people about the medical effects of a nuclear weapon dropping on a city, be it Boston, Hawaii, LA, San Francisco, you name it. And people started to realize that nuclear weapons were bad for their health, to put it mildly, and they would produce the final epidemic of the human race. So in 5 years, with a lot of publicity and teaching, 80% of Americans were opposed to the concept of nuclear war. We got 1 million people in Central Park, the largest rally ever in the history of America. I met with Ronald Reagan for an hour and a quarter. I met Gorbachev, Pierre Trudeau. And at the end of that time, Reagan and Gorbachev worked together and brought an end to the Cold War at the end of the 80s. Then we thought, thank God that's over. They'll get rid of the weapons. But they didn't, because the military men liked their weapons, which is why I called a book I wrote, Missile Envy, a la Freud. And we are in a very similar position as we were at the height of the Cold War. In fact, we're probably closer to nuclear war now than we've ever been, ever.
We have done a few shows on here, and like Bruce Allen, who will be on a little bit later, who worked directly with Gorbachev in the time of perestroika, he feels that very deeply. So, we've had that discussion with several people, but, Yes. So it's hard to hear that. This Friday, you may or may not know, but this Friday in our alarm system, we have alarms that tell us if we're having a hurricane or a tidal wave or an air raid, and now we have a new nuclear drop alarm that is going to be tested for us to be listening to.
Yes, I read about that. Well, that's because you're scared that North Korea could lob a bomb on you. I don't think they can. They certainly haven't got a missile that can do that at the moment. You've got the Strategic Air Command in Hawaii, which can kill one third of the Earth's population. You've got a huge military base and you're very vulnerable, and what you do is really wicked, and those military should be removed from Hawaii. You know, the beautiful, beautiful islands of Hawaii, to have such wickedness there is really awful.
Well, one thing that got announced today, it's for us, it's November 28th. I think you are tomorrow right now. You're the November 29th. But in the New York Times and in CNN, you know, the headlines read, North Korea fires a ballistic missile in a further challenge to Trump. And the subtext on that is that this missile that they fired flew both higher and longer than previous such launches. So it's a bold act of defiance against the president, Trump, and that what is being said, it went higher, frankly, than any previous shot they've taken, Mr. Mattis said. I'm reading a little bit on this. The bottom line is that this can reach into the central United States. So I just saw this just before I went on the show.
It's not really true, because they haven't made a missile that can deliver the bomb hurtling through the atmosphere after transiting through space for many thousands of kilometers. So they haven't perfected that yet, but they will. But, you know, how dare America get all up in arms when it's got 6,800 mostly hydrogen bombs, can destroy most life on Earth, and that's excluding using the Russian bombs, which would be used anyway. America's so hypocritical. You know, and America killed Gaddafi in Libya. If he'd had nuclear weapons, they probably would not have. So you can understand why Kim Il-sung is making nuclear weapons, and also Kim Il-sung says he will stop making nuclear weapons and delivery systems if America signs a peace treaty with him, which they never have, a non-aggression treaty, and stop having huge military exercises just south of the border twice a year, and starts trading with them. He said he would stop making them. So all America has to do is sit down and talk to the man. But, you know, the Pentagon needs enemies. They need North Korea, so they'll keep making their nuclear weapons. It's really obscene. Let's be frank. Mm-hmm. I just get very fed up with America's hypocrisy. You know, they've led the arms race at every step of the way except one. When others emulate them, they get all up in arms and self-righteous.
Yes, they intended.
They should do what the Bible says. See not the mote in the other person's eye. Look instead for the mote in your own eye. And, you know, to work out relationships in the world on an equitable basis, like one does in a marriage or with a close friend, you talk about things and you work things out and you concede and work with them with a certain amount of mutual respect.
So we are working in this program, and many people that are, I would say, allies in activism against nuclear war. We're working very hard to sit there and try and get that kind of sense into people. But do you see that happening anywhere?
No, not really at the moment. You see, what we did in the 80s, the doctors, was we got on television and radio and we described the medical effects of a bomb dropping on a city. And why don't I describe that right now? What city are you in at the moment, Felicia?
Hanalei.
Okay, so The bomb's coming in at 20 times the speed of sound. You won't even hear it. And it will explode with a heat 5 or 6 times greater than the center of the sun. It will dig a hole 3/4 of a mile wide and 800 feet deep, converting new buildings in the earth to radioactive fallout shot up in the mushroom cloud. 5 miles from the epicenter, everyone will be either vaporized, turned into gas, or turned into charcoal statues, as was a woman holding a baby in Hiroshima. 20 miles from the epicenter, if you look at the flash, you'll be instantly blinded. You'll be terribly, terribly burnt. You'll be turned into a missile traveling at 100 miles an hour by winds of 500 miles an hour. Buildings will collapse and topple. Windows will pop off corn. Shards of glass flying at 100 miles an hour will decapitate people. All hospitals destroyed, all doctors dead. And then the area will be consumed by a firestorm of 3,000 square miles. Everything and everyone will burn to death. Now, that's only one bomb. Right?
Right.
Well, yeah, Kim Il-sung, he won't have a bomb nearly as big as that. That's a big Russian bomb, 20 megatons. But these bombs are most extraordinary, and people need to get that into their souls and into their bones, understanding what we're talking about, and get very, very scared. And if you're scared, your adrenaline turns on and you decide what you're going to do. And if you decide you're going to get rid of those bombs and take the lead in America, because you do live in a potential democracy, you can become a leader, as I did. And I was only an Australian. I was a woman. I was an alien. And I led the movement against nuclear weapons in the 80s because I was so deeply concerned, and I took the Hippocratic Oath. I'd taken that to save lives, and I'm a pediatrician, and potentially all the world's children are my patients.
Wow, that's powerful. And when we were talking online a little bit ago, a few weeks ago actually, there had been even like a collapse in a tunnel in the nuclear power plant in Korea. Do you remember what I'm talking about on that? There were a couple hundred people died?
Yes, it wasn't the nuclear power plant. It was where North Korea had been testing bombs, and apparently in one of the excavations there, which was apparently full of radioactivity, it collapsed. But there's been no release that I can find of scientific evidence of release of radioactive elements in the air. Now, that's not saying there wasn't, but I haven't found any confirmation of that yet.
Okay, so it's better than it sounded at first. I've heard some people...
Well, we don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you followed how Japan is continuing to do with Fukushima? Is that continuing to be irradiating the ocean?
Yeah, 300 to 400 tons of very radioactive water is emptying into the Pacific Ocean every day, and has happened daily ever since the accident 5 years ago. The Pacific Ocean is becoming more and more radioactive, and the elements are concentrating in the food chain, particularly in fish, which live thousands of miles. And if you eat a fish with radioactive elements in it, you can't taste, smell, or see them, and it takes 5 years when you've ingested radioactive elements to develop leukemia, and 15 years for solid cancers to appear. And these elements produce cancers of every organ of the body. Meanwhile, there are 3 molten cores in the earth at Fukushima, each weighing about 100 tons of intense radioactivity. Building 2 is very fragile. If there's another earthquake greater than 7 on the Richter scale, Building 2 and the others could collapse into the molten core and release so much radiation they would have to evacuate Tokyo, but that's impossible of 35 million people. So we're living in a state of really acute radiological anxiety, and it could poison much of the Northern Hemisphere. My son and my beloved grandchildren live in Boston, and if anything should happen in Fukushima, because it's so very unstable, I'm going to get them evacuated out to Australia, because the 2 air masses at the equator northern and southern air masses don't mix, so we'll be more safe in the southern hemisphere.
Well, it seems like there is an understated, for the most part, like it's almost as if what happened in Fukushima is certainly lost the headlines for some time, but it seems to me that it's just getting as bad or worse every day since it's happened. And so when we're looking at both non-aggressive outcomes from the power plants, and then we're looking at this threat that's going on now of war again, how is Australia working to deal with this? I mean, what do you guys, do you have any recommendations?
Nothing. Australia is sleepwalking to Armageddon. And in fact, I've got a new book that's just come out called Sleepwalking to Armageddon. We've got a very right-wing government who denies everything. They're in a state of psychic numbing. We are virtually the 51st state of the United States. We've got a huge base in the middle of Australia called Pine Gap, which is an American base by which they would operate the whole nuclear war. They are operating their drones and killing people from that base. We are, in fact, war criminals by allowing that to happen. We've got Marines in Darwin and other US bases. So we don't have a moral leg to stand on at the moment. And that makes me very embarrassed as an Australian.
So,
and in fact, the CIA deposed my prime minister, the best prime minister we ever had, because he was deposed the day before he was going to name the CIA operatives at Pine Gap. So America deposed him. And that makes me really angry. How dare America depose governments in other countries? And they do it all over the world, and they go on and on about Russia interfering in their election. I mean, let's be frank, America's interfered in almost every election since the Second World War and killed lots of leaders, including the wonderful leader in Chile. What was his name? He was a physician, and they murdered
Arianda? No.
Yeah, Allende.
Allende.
They dropped bombs on his palace. Because he was a so-called socialist. Well, so was Jesus a socialist. Leave thy worldly goods and follow me. It's more difficult for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than a camel to pass through the eye of a needle. And yet people in America call themselves Christians. Let's be frank, there's enough food in the world to feed all those starving children in Yemen who are developing cholera. Just hideous what we're doing. Money is the root of all evil. And you know, and the whole world economy depends on money, consumerism, buying and selling. I mean, and we're destroying the planet.
I wish you were in the studio with us, because as we go through the rest of our show, there are many people of like-minded. And in fact, in the later part of the show, we're going to have the producer and director of a film called Terra Inferma, which means ill earth or sick earth, and that's going to be a major motion feature film that is filmed here, but it's looking at the corruption of science and almost the hijacking of scientists
to destroy the planet.
And to corrupt the truth. You know, there is a corruption of truth that comes out in this, and so in Sleepwalking to Armageddon, the essence of that book is looking at where we're at. Does it offer suggestions about where we can go?
Yes. It's got wonderful scientists and sociologists and the like Chomsky and others who, you know, just the leading scientists in America. But at the end, it's got people like Tim Wright and others. Now, Tim Wright is a lawyer who is a member of ICANN, International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, and they've just won the Nobel Peace Prize. And ICANN is composed of hundreds of young people, and they've been very clever. They've been working at the United Nations, lobbying and educating the ambassadors and the leaders of nations, and they've got 122 nations to agree to abolish nuclear weapons. Now, it's true that there are 189 nations at the UN, and none of the nuclear powers have signed. Of course, they won't. but they're having a very, very big impact. They've just won the Nobel Peace Prize, and I really value what they're doing. Instead of taking the politicians on full frontal, which is what I did with Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan and others, they're working behind the scenes in a very, very clever way. And so there's hope for that, and they've got chapters at the end of the book. There's another chapter called Don't Bank on the Bomb. You need to find out if your bank is involved in nuclear weapons and missile systems, and if they are, ring your manager and say you're going to take your money out of the bank and let's say desist from funding and investing in corporations that make nuclear weapons and delivery systems and who are investing in destroying the planet.
So, Helen Caldicott, when I look at your website, which is helencaldicott.com, C-A-L-D-I-C-O-T-T, you know, you have written a number of books. It looks like you are involved in many organizations like Physicians for Social Responsibility, International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, Women's Action for Nuclear Disarmament. Those are some of the earlier ones that you were in, but there's a whole list of ones.
I founded those organizations.
Yes, and I see, you know, you are in a film that was nominated for an Academy Award, several of them in a number of films. It looks like you have many actions that you have worked on to be, even like your weekly, you have a weekly radio show, If You Love the Planet, This Planet.
I don't know, I stopped that.
Okay.
But it went on for 3 years, and in fact, if you go to my website, you can download it. And I interviewed a whole lot of really fascinating people. Scientists and people who are experts in ozone depletion, all sorts of things. So, yeah, you can still listen to that.
So, what word do you have of either encouragement or action? I know that you have made some suggestions, but what, you know, right now you have Hawaii listening to you, and certainly Kauai.
Well, what you must do, I mean, your President Jefferson so many years ago said an informed democracy will behave in a responsible fashion. And I've been lucky being a physician. I know a lot about medicine and physiology and pathology and radiation and the like. But if you read the books that I've written, and you can find them on my website, you'll become so well informed you'll be able to debate any senator or congressman and beat them. And you can become a star of stage, green, and radio. What you need to do is educate yourself and then educate all your fellow citizens. Use the talkback radio shows. Get on television. Do things like Greenpeace that attract the media. I mean, if you take into your gut and your soul the fact that we may destroy tomorrow or tonight the only life in the universe that we know about, and what your responsibility is to your children. Do you love your children enough to save their lives? If you really take that into your gut, you'll go through the periods of grief, shock and disbelief and depression and anger. And it's during the angry phase that you will be motivated and your psyche will tell you what to do. And you're lucky you have a democracy that can be used. And remember, your politicians are not your leaders. They are your representatives. And you must educate them and make sure that they know that you're their leaders. And if they don't do the right thing, make sure they're not elected next time. And by God, they'll do the right thing if they're scared enough.
Yes. And, you know, many, like, we're a small community here. Our island has about 70,000 people, so it's a small group of people.
70,000 people is enough to turn the earth upside down.
Well, you know what? We're trying to do that. And Kauai Community Radio, this is listener-supported, and it's volunteer-run. And, you know, we work really hard to be shining lights in dark corners and doing what we can to be helping both make our island as righteous as we can have it be, and then to emanate that out, you know. So we are working very hard, but it
I'm
is
sure
a challenge.
Yep.
Well, I really appreciate you coming on the air with us. It's a blessing to have somebody of your skill and international influence, Helen Caldicott. And people can find you at helencaldicott.com. And we value your newest book, Sleepwalking to Armageddon, and in the process of awakening the people and the listeners. So I thank you so
much. Thank you very much for having me. It's been a great pleasure. And I love Hawaii.
Yes, if you get over here.
I love getting out of the plane in Hawaii and smelling the air because it smells of flowers. I love it.
Yes. It's a really, really wonderful scent of vegetation. And which, you say you live in Melbourne?
No, I live 2 hours south of Sydney in a little village called Berry.
Ah, okay. It was very beautiful there as well.
Yes, it is.
Yes, so, okay, well, we have to keep our planet beautiful.
So, thank you, Felicia.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Helen Caldicott.
Okay, bye-bye.
Aloha.
Yeah, love to everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right. And Jake, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. A little under the weather today.
Well, it's easy to be a little under the weather when it's been raining. It's certainly been raining here. I don't mind the rain, but it's been windy and rainy. And so we're going to have a number of interesting people on the show today. So what I'm going to do in just a few minutes after we announce the Kalo Festival that's coming up. The Kalo Festival is always really great fun at Waipa at the end of the, you know, end of Hanalei Bay. This was guests that were going to come on last week, and I filmed them just earlier than this show, and because I couldn't make it today. And these are people who work in the diplomatic field. We have Vladimir Orlov from Moscow, and then Bruce Allen and Cynthia Lazaroff, who are from Anahola. But they are back on their way to Moscow again tomorrow. They are working very diligently with the layers of non-governmental organizations around there and directly somewhat with our folks from Washington, D.C. And, in fact, Vladimir, who left, I think, yesterday, he is, in fact, now in Washington, D.C., also working. So there is quite a bit of effort to be keeping the pot that's simmering on simmer and not a hot boil between our countries. So you're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Jake with Kauai Soapbox. And let's hear about the Kalo Festival. That's this Sunday, and I will certainly be there.
It's Kalo Festival time again, folks. Sunday, December 3rd, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Waipa, just past Hanalei. A celebration of everything Kalo. A fun, engaging day for the whole family, great Christmas shopping for locally made crafts, silent auction and keiki activities, including a water slide, ono food with kalo, music and hula all day, poi pounding, hands-on crafts, and recipe and biggest kalo contests. Contest entry forms and more information at waipafoundation.org or 826-9969. The Waipa Kalo Festival, Sunday, December 3rd, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. And the Kalo Festival is always a lot of great fun. Definitely going to be there. So I am going to share with us my interview with Vladimir Orlov of what's called the Peer Center in Moscow, and then Bruce Allen and Cynthia Lazaroff from Anahola, but you know, I joke and say we have an inverse bell curve of normal people here, and they are definitely among that bell curve because they're pretty extraordinary. So we're going to hear a little bit about Vladimir is how they say it in Russian, his trip to Kauai. He just came to Kauai, so I just filmed this, and so we're going to hear it.
Hawaii is very casual.
And so people know Bruce and they know Cynthia. And Vladimir, if you are able to just tell us a little bit about yourself, you know.
Sure. I was trained as journalist and I worked in Russia as journalist in my early years of career. Then I decided to build an NGO, non-governmental organization, dealing with international security and with the proliferation of nuclear weapons. And now it's 23 years after I built that organization. Now I have younger generation of people there, and I do much more work on educating young people, particularly in their MA program.
That's master's?
That's master's program, and we built a program, dual degree, between Russian and American universities, between Middlebury College in California and Moscow University of International Relations. So we have students who study, both Russians, Americans, and other international students, who study first in Moscow first semester. Then they move to California, and they can compare our reviews. They can study both in Russia and the United States. They get both diplomas of the universities, which have equal power both in the United States and in Russia and globally. And I invest more and more of my time in those educational efforts. And finally, I love to travel. So I guess this is my fifth time here on the island of Kauai.
Oh.
I first time came here 15 years ago, and I love this island. I feel great here every time I come here.
And you are from Moscow, or are you from a different area of Russia?
Yeah, I was born and raised in Moscow, and I'm that urban guy which loves hiking and loves escaping into the nature.
And Bruce and Cynthia, who are here with you, I consider them in the peace industry. That might be a fair way of saying you are also, right, like these people that you're teaching, the young people that have experience both in Moscow and California, is it the intention that they might use their experience and their knowledge in the diplomatic regions, as that would be typically the kind of work they might go into?
Yeah, it may be diplomacy. It may be work in academic institutes. It may be, maybe they will build their own NGOs. Maybe some of them will work as journalists. But they will be well-trained in the issues of global security and proliferation of weapons of mass destruction, which is unfortunately a very big topic these days.
So since you're bringing that up, and like with both Bruce and Cynthia who are here with you, we talked about that. That's something they're very concerned about, so I'm glad that they introduced me to you. How big of a fear is it? Like, we here on Kauai and in Hawaii, we've been getting these things saying you have to have 14 days of food in your pantry so you can close the doors on our little wooden buildings to survive a nuclear war or a nuclear attack. And we don't really have any kind of place to be safe, so it's unnerving to hear that. We are learning that Korea is the threat, is what we're being told. You work in this field. What is your assessment of the potential of nuclear war with Korea or India or China or Russia? I mean, where do you see that we're at, and are we partnering well with Russia?
Well, relations between the United States and Russia are really at a very, very low stage now, which is unfortunate, which is dangerous. But having said that, may I say that fear is not necessarily that good thing to have. Soviet Union and the United States learned how to live with their nuclear arsenals for many decades. When I was a school kid, I also remembered that we were shown in Moscow a nuclear shelter because Americans can attack us and bomb us. But living with fear never helps. You need to look at the prospects and see the future of the relationship. This is why Russia and the United States, although through very, very difficult moments, learned, I hope, how to live responsibly with nuclear arsenals. But then other players come, and you mentioned North Korea. North Korea actually is neighbor of my country, literally. We have border with North Korea. Mm. I have millions of Russians who live in the Russian Far East knowing that its neighbor developing nuclear weapons, has nuclear weapons and has missiles. But I realize what Russia has not necessarily would be a sign of hope for people here in Kauai. In that sense, just a very clear statement, no, North Koreans do not have a capability today to have a missile.
And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilo. I was just talking to Vladimir, and he said, pull that little piece out right there. So, okay. They just had done a test today on a nuclear, on a missile launch from Korea, and it looked like, you know, that it has the range to make it to the central United States. And so I got a little call before the show came on. They said, hey, pull that piece out. but what he has said is that it looked like, you know, it's a little bit of ways away from that for them. But we just heard from Helen Caldicott, and she felt that it's still not possible, but, you know, I'm not an expert, but it seemed like today the big word is that maybe they have more than they've said. But so we're hearing more from Vladimir or
Russian player. They also want to live in peace. The same like people in Kauai, the same like people in the United States. They may see it differently through the different lens. This is why it is very important now to try to solve holistically the situation in the Northeast Asia region, addressing all the situation in the Korean Peninsula to reduce the fears both of those who looking here just worried where is our shelter, but also of the North Koreans themselves. Rational player would never start nuclear war, would never start missile attack if its own security interests are also respected.
Some of the opinion of the people in our community is that our own president, President Trump, is sometimes a little reckless with his words, and it seems provocative and maybe picking a fight. We don't have as much exposure to what Vladimir Putin is taking positions on, but is the Russian government showing calm and restraint? I mean, really, I look at it, they're surrounded. They got Pakistan, Iran, both kind of coming up as players, China, Korea. How many they got around them? Quite a few, yeah?
We have almost all
Israel.
Nuclear weapons.
You're surrounded.
States surrounding my country.
So it's a bigger deal for you than for us.
I would say nuclear weapons should be a deal for everybody, but one should not go into any extreme of the fears. We in Russia think that North Korea issue is an important issue to be solved. You cannot just leave it like that and just happily leave with nuclear weapon North Korea. But the issue, you, as you said, you may provoke
right.
that player, or you may engage that player, engage into diplomacy, engage into solutions to listen also to its own interests, keeping your own interests in mind. This is what diplomacy is. With North Korea, they are scared. They are scared about U.S. military drills around their border. They, let's not forget the fact which is not that well known, unfortunately. There were not North Koreans who first introduced nuclear weapons on the Korean Peninsula.
Who was
that
it?
Were Americans, because for many, many years, tactical nuclear weapons of the United States were located in South Korea, very close to North Korea. Does it tell something? Yeah, because there is the story much larger than we sometimes get from the media. And the provocative language saying we can use all the methods against you may it really be helpful? I doubt so. I think that more importantly is that we start addressing the interests of each other. The interest of the United States is clear. Not to get attacked, not to get any threat here, but the interest of North Korea is that they want to keep their nation. They want to keep their nation safe, not under threat of attack, not to be called any part of axis of evil, because if you are called axis of evil, you have two choices. You either give up, say, okay, take my country, take my capital, I give up, or you defend yourself. So this is where diplomats should play a very important role, and there is still a chance. It's not a military, and not only a military issue.
So when you came to Kauai, and Bruce, were you working with him here on Kauai, or you just ran into each other?
First of all, I would just say that the program that he's initiated with colleagues on our side is extraordinary. This dual degree program with Russian and American graduate students working and studying together in Moscow and in Middlebury, Monterey campus. Cynthia and I have taught there over the past year as well. And you find that's a sense of great promise, because some of the brightest students on both sides are developing these strong personal connections right now. And they, youth is always more open, less prejudiced, and capable of devising creative solutions. So we're building capital toward the future.
And Cynthia and you are almost grown examples of that, correct? Because you went to Moscow as a young woman and were working there, and you're helping with still this, similar to what Vladimir is doing?
Well, we Bruce and I both started out as students, as exchange students in Russia, in the late 70s at Leningrad, what was then Leningrad State University. And what Vladimir is describing in this program that he started and Bruce has been talking about is truly amazing, because you have the opportunity to actually begin to see the world from a completely different point of view. You begin to actually see the world from the shoes of another country, another people. And my hope with this program, I don't know of any other one like it in the world right now, is that these students who are learning and working together, they're not just going to Americans to Russia or Russians to America. These are students who are in the same classroom at the same time from these countries, these two countries, and they are building relationships, and they're planning to work, many of them, in Russian-American relations and in non-proliferation for their lives. So they will have relationships over the course of decades to come, so that when they get into situations that are difficult, they already know one another. They have a relationship, a foundation, and that so much diplomacy depends on relationships and good relationships, and we need more of that right now. We don't have enough of that right now. We need people who really understand the other side from both sides. So that's what Bruce and I learned when we went there as students, and that's informed our life and work in this field, and that's what Vladimir has built this program, co-built this program for the future, for, we hope, for decades to come. It's a big sign of hope for me in the field.
So, Vladimir, what is the name of your organization? I know it's PIR, but what does that stand for?
Yeah, this is actually a Russian acronym for Policy Studies in Russia. But it's also has a translation, direct translation from Russian. Pir means feast. So we always think of Pir as intellectual feast. That we have, that kind of, intellectual wow, if I may say here.
And you came to Kauai to do something at Fort Elizabeth, is that correct?
Yeah, that was a completely different part of my interest. It has nothing to do with international security, although it has something to do with U.S.-Russian relations, because you always learn. And when I first came here to Kauai 15 years ago, I knew very little about Russian presence on Hawaii or Kauai. And when my tourist bus stopped at Fort Elizabeth, Russian fort, and the tour guide said, the stop is optional, we can go quicker to Waimea Canyon, because this is where really interesting stuff is. I said, stop, and my five-year-old son was with me. I said, stop, Russians want to see Russian fort. And of course we stopped, and we got a very good small tour there. And this is how my interest in this place started already some time ago. But these days, our Russian Americans, U.S. citizens of Russian origin, they decided to organize a conference in Kapan commemorating 200 years of Fort Elizabeth and also 200 years of Russian flag, which had been raised over Kauai for a very short period of time, for 1 year. And I also started digging deeper, as we say, not necessarily at Fort Elizabeth per se, but also looking at that shared history, our shared history of opportunity, but also of zeal and when Russians came here, when Bostonian captains were not happy about that. That was an interesting story coming back to 200 years. That was also interesting for me to learn the issues of preservation of Fort Elizabeth here. In fact, there are two other Russian forts which were built in Kauai, both in their northern part of the island.
So there's Fort Alexander right next to the Princeville Hotel.
Correct.
In Princeville. Where's the third one?
The third one was located on the other side, almost across Alexander, but it was called Barclay.
Okay.
But we never managed to find its remains. Okay. So there were three forts altogether here.
And the Russians came here mostly with trade, right? With the ships. Correct? And whaling and...
Russians came here for the trade and exchange of goods. Russians at that time had Alaska as part of Russian America. Russia also had Fort Ross in its ownership in California. So the places, particularly Alaska, needed food. And this was almost ideal place to find food. But the developments came very quickly when the King Kamuali decided that Russians could be also helpful in his fight against Kamehameha. So Russians got involved almost immediately in the local geopolitics here in Hawaii. And for about a year, Russian flag was raised in Waimea, in Fort Elizabeth. Russian flag also was raised in Hanalei. But Russian Tsar, Emperor Alexander I, and this fort was named after him in Hanalei, decided not to get involved. He said, no, we don't want to deteriorate, to make worse our relations with the United States. So it was too far for Russia to get involved in this business here in Kauai politically. So Russia decided to stay abstain from a gift of Kauai which was given by the Kauaian king.
Wow, I learned more than I knew on that part of the story. So thank you for coming on that. And I appreciate your time here, and that the three of you are working on a project, a film project, that will be coming out. What will it be called? Do you know the name yet?
Well, it's Toward Stability in U.S.-Russian Relations. It should be out in about March, April.
And you've made a number of films, correct?
Yes, many on the Russian, or in Russia, or in this former Soviet Union. So this is a really important time, we feel, to bring voices forward from both countries of all ages that see the real issues that we have in our relationship, but also what the real opportunities are and what the stakes are in the relationship, how important it is that no matter what our differences are, that we have shared interests that are existential threats, like the threat of nuclear war, nuclear confrontation, the threat of climate change, and things like that, that we really need to focus on those shared threats while we work on these other issues, because these are existential threats that if anything like this were to happen, it would be catastrophic for all life, and for it would be the end of civilization. So we feel that we need to bring voices forward to really build bridges now, at a time when so many bridges have been broken. So we're trying to do that with this film.
And so it is an honor that Kauai continues to be a place where we are really a tiny little dot on the planet, but we are a gem of an island, and where we do a lot of good conversation and a lot of good action happens here. So we're really pleased to have you here. Thank you so much for coming. And if you have any final words or thoughts for the Kauai community, from your country or from your heart, you know, we're happy to give you that opportunity to share it.
Thank you so much. I should tell you that, it's every time, and it's nothing here related to North Korea or to Russian Fort Elizabeth. Every time I come here to Kauai, every time it's very, very sad moment when I come back. But I have a lot of memories.
When you leave, you mean sad moment when you leave?
Yeah, when I leave the island, when I come back home, because so many impressions. Just 2 days ago, there was a great hike I made just through Alakai Swamp. I could not imagine how I could leave this island going back home without that impression. It was rainy, it was muddy, and it was great. So people who live here on the island of Kauai are definitely blessed with this beautiful nature, with this beautiful spirit. Aloha.
Aloha. Is there a word in Russian for aloha that you
no,
can teach
No, this is aloha is very unique, because you can say privet, you can say любовь, you can have all different meanings. Well, probably privet would be best when you say aloha, when you say hi, but yeah.
Okay, well, thank you. Aloha. Mahalo for all of you coming on.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.
All right, so that was Vladimir Orlov, Bruce Allen, and Cynthia Lazaroff. And Bruce and Cynthia are part of the home team here, but often out in the world doing amazing things. And Cynthia is a filmmaker. And so when they're making a film, I believe that is supported by the Carnegie Foundation. It's going to be something that will be more like on television, and I believe that's going to be 5 episodes. And so documentaries can do wonders in educating the people, but so also can feature films. Sometimes we learn a lot from things like a textbook. Other times there are big ways that we can learn from a film that is really entertaining. And so in just a moment, we are going to be talking to our next guest, Daryl Mack and Darielle Mack, and then Ricardo. And but we got a call. We're going to take our call real quick, and then we are going to talk to our next group. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. Thank you for that interview. That was fascinating. This is Marge calling. I did attend the KIUC board meeting today.
Okay. Can you speak?
I have some interesting news to report.
Can you speak more strongly in your phone?
I will try to do that. How's that?
A little better.
Okay. Thank you. Company that is contracted by KIUC called the Joule, J-O-U-L-E company, they are contracted by KIUC to do everything that's necessary to set up the Pua'apai Hydro project. And they were there today, and they decided today to start a complete EIS.
Environmental impact statement?
Yes. They were only going to do EAS, but they have decided today to start the EIS process.
Okay, an environmental impact statement is more thorough than an environmental assessment because it looks at social, cultural, and economic aspects, not just the environment.
Exactly. And I think, although they would not really directly answer my inquiry as to why they were doing this, but I think it was because so many people have, measured in on this issue. And I think they got the message that unless they do everything they can to eliminate any kind of social pressures, that they would continue to have some kind of problems trying to work this project out to fruition.
So
that's my
real quickly,
guess.
What is the project again? So it's clear for
I think it's called Pua'apai, the hydro project on the west side.
Oh, okay, so that is the water storage battery.
Yeah.
So it's clear for people listening, and it kind of flows into our next conversation, no pun intended, is that because we have so much renewables, particularly solar, more than we can use now on a high sun day, it's more than what's needed, it will be pumping water up into a higher reservoir. So then when the sun's off, that water will run down through a hydro piece.
Right.
Okay, just because maybe people don't know what it is. So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you for explaining that. So they expect this project of doing the EIS will take at least 2 years, 1 year to do the research and 1 year to actually write it. And there will be public hearings once the draft has been prepared. So just to let people know that at least that they just decided today to do this. So.
Okay, so to the listeners who are hearing this, when they're doing an environmental impact study, that is the time to really raise your voice if you have a concern. And it's good to be proactive and look at how it can necessarily be resolved. In some ways, to have a water storage battery is kind of sounds like a pretty good idea. I'm sure it has some impacts. The time not to be fighting it is once the study's done and they're going to implement it. That's what happens a lot of times. It's after that whole window of putting it out to the public. So voice up now, not later.
Right. Okay. And the only other thing that's causing them problems, KIUC problems now, is trying to afford the huge amount of money that it's taking to preserve the birds from flying into their wires and the amount of takes that they have to pay for.
That would be the Newell Shearwaters.
Yeah, at least them.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so anyway, they are applying for a grant, but I couldn't get any information from whom or for how much. And it's for a habitat conservation plan, and hopefully we'll get more information about that. I was promised by one of the staff members that they would try to get more information for me about that, because these decisions, as you may know or your listeners may not know, all the decisions are made at executive sessions and or in committees. both of which no member is allowed to attend. So when they come up with motions to approve something that has already been decided in a committee or in an executive session, I can get no information as a member going to their board meetings. I can get no information from asking the question, what is this, what does it entail, and why are we doing it, and how much is it costing us?
So one moment. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Jake with Kauai Soapbox. Marge Dente, one of our core founding members of KKCR, is on the phone with us, telling us about KIUC's board meeting that happens on Tuesdays. What is it, like the last Tuesday of the month?
It's usually the fourth Tuesday. The next one is going to be December 12th because of the Christmas holiday.
And I want to also say that on December 8th over on Oahu, unfortunately on Oahu at the Department of Land and Natural Resources, there'll be a Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting. There will be a discussion that does relate to KIUC. They're looking to get a 65-year lease of the diversion of the North Fork of the Wailua River. That's been a very controversial issue because for much time until somebody augmented the diversion, they were taking 100% of the water flow in medium to low flow days. And so this has been a very hot topic. So Thursday, December 8th, which is a week from this Thursday, the Board of Land and Natural Resources will be deciding if they're going to give that 65-year lease for that water diversion, and people can send an email in with testimony, and if they have testimony of how that might impact them, they should do that now, not later, or if they're fine with it, they could put that in there too. And so when you said KIUC, that was the only thing. No, also the Board of Land Natural Resources meeting. Did they mention it?
They did mention it because they knew it was coming up. And it's, I think it's called an RSQ application, but I'm not sure. But what did happen today was our CEO, David Bissell, when he gave his report, he showed photographs of the North Fork with water running freely. He said that was just taken recently.
Yeah. Well, I don't think they actually fixed the where the concrete was cut. So the water has been cut. I mean, has been moving since somebody did that with the concrete.
Yeah, I presume that's what it was. But anyway, that's what they're... I don't know if they're going to use those photographs as part of this December 8th hearing. I don't know. But it was shown, and there was discussion about that at this meeting.
Okay.
But I just want to let people know that even though for a while under the chairmanship of Alan Smith, questions were allowed to be asked during the testimony part of the meetings. I was warned today that I am not able really to ask any more questions during the testimony part of the meeting. Mm. I can only give my opinion about anything that's going on. And so I find that a little bit intimidating, because unless we can get our questions answered as to exactly what decisions have been made, why, and how much it's going to cost us as members, how can I give testimony? So, and when I try to get answers from individual board members, I don't get answers. They say, oh, you'll have to ask the management.
Right, so that's kind of the process of disempowerment. There's a lot of good things I would say about our Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, but we need to help them get better with the C part of KIUC in cooperating with the community. So
right.
Thank you so much, Marge.
Well, I just want to do a shout-out for Beth Tokioka. She's very helpful, and she said that she would get back to me with hopefully the answers to some of the questions that I had today.
Okay, so Beth is their public relations person. Marge, invite her on to KKCR. She's come in here a little bit. Okay, thank you
so much. Okay, thanks, Alicia. Aloha.
Aloha. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man and Edible Hawaiian Islands.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com. Or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
KKCR Hanalei.
All right. Here we got Edible Hawaiian Islands.
Edible Hawaiian Islands is a subscription-based, advertiser-supported print and digital magazine, the only James Beard Award-winning food and drink magazine in the state of Hawaii. Edible Hawaiian Islands digital magazine may be enjoyed at ediblehi.com.
Okay, volunteer radio. All right, now we have some more guests in here. Got to see if everybody's kind of mic'd up. All right. Did I say your name wrong?
Dariel.
Dariel.
Dariel Mack.
Dariel Mack. All right. You've got a movie coming out that I'm really excited to be hearing about. And then we have Ricardo Cavalcanti.
Uh-huh.
And you have a helicopter named Dragonfly that you're working on. And I've got some friends in here, Michael and
Heidi.
Michael and Heidi. So
aloha.
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 All right. So, and you're hosting these guys, yeah?
Yes.
Yes. All right, Dariel. Tell us what you got going on, because you're making a film.
We're bringing a feature film to Kauai that's a feature film telling the story of the Earth battling big government, mankind, corporate accidents, and giving voice to all kinds of layers of environmental issues through the stories of scientists who've been fighting to make the science come out to people. And what we've done in this film is we've brought in scientific partners from, it was the impetus of environmental scientists that created this, their work in the real world with corporations or creating new technology in the environment or new technology like green helicopter, and their stories on the road to bring this work to people and the troubles of that kind of endeavor as scientists talking about Earth issues, bringing science in a world where science and issues of the world are abused and blocked in many ways in terms of their truth, in terms of their power, in terms of the integrity that they can bring and help to raise and solve issues. So it's the film is called Terra Infirma. It's a big feature. It's a PG. It's a all family film, a theatrical release. We're talking to, we're offers out with big A-list talent from Hollywood and across the world that are coming into this feature film to be shot here in Hawaii, because Hawaii is a cross section of Asia and North America, and that's what this feature film tells. It tells a story of a cross-section of North America and Asia coming to terms with these issues globally. And it's a format in this beautiful land of Kauai to give voice to those issues. And one of the unique things about this project, which is being directed by Mikel Solomon, who is the ability to have a feature film that's an action, adventure feature film that gives the Earth a voice. Because usually in a beautiful feature, in a documentary, a film, we're all wowed by the beauty of nature, by the quiet beauty. It's all of these things. But how often do we get the opportunity to actually give the earth a voice, to hear the earth talk about her struggle and her fight? And this film has actually given the earth a voice to fight next to man, to fight next to corporations, and to and indigenous people, because it's a this film about all of these layers colliding.
Wow, that's wonderful. And it's in that film, it's set like in the present day, like in my mind I'm picturing something like Avatar, but is it set in the present moment with...
It's set in the present moment. It's set now, which is why we have the ability to bring to this film new technology, leading technology. Like we have partners again who have created open cell technology, like Scott Smith, who works for Mark Ruffalo's water.org, water warrior company out of New York, who's inventing things to clean up oil spills and giving people the resources to get to those things, or water filters for contaminations that have happened in Flint or are happening across, like are happening here in Hawaii or happening in Japan or happening all over China. It's resources that this film does, or green technology, like innovative green technology like Ricardo has created, which is a brand new technology, an innovative technology coming into the marketplace called the Dragonfly, which is based on hydrogen peroxide, not fuel. And we'll let him talk about that, a little bit of the technology of bringing a green technology helicopter into the air space world and the fight to do that, which is one of the journeys also in this movie, is the journeys that scientists face to bring green technology or green solutions to a world who denies them.
So, Ricardo, do you want to tell us about your helicopter for a moment?
Sure. I'd be glad to.
Put your mouth right near the mic.
Okay.
There you go.
Well, I'm in aviation for like 26 years, and I had high responsibility of do pre-flight tests for 747s, 737s, and so on. So aviation, besides be very technical and is a deep science, is also a passion, right? You have to be passionate for what you do. So the Dragonfly helicopter is an opportunity for normal people have in the garage, have in the farm.
Right, it's like having your own little helicopter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, it's, the empty weight is 350 pounds for two-seater. And the one
seat,
yeah, it's very light, all carbon graphite. You know, you can move it with a single hand then. So the one seat also is 220 pounds, very light. And they do not have pedals because they are removed by rockets at the tip of the blades. The noise also is very cooperative with all that we are deal with today. You know, it's 72 decibel only, so you can turn him outside here, nobody hear about.
Right, I saw it, and it's pretty cool. You know, it's got the hydrogen peroxide, is like the fuel for it. It makes no real pollution. It's really great. I want to just pause us for a moment. We have our person from the utility company responding to our last comment. Aloha, Beth, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Felicia.
Hi.
Hi. I was listening a little bit earlier, Marge had called in to get some information that came out of the board meeting. The one thing I wanted to mention is the meeting that you had referenced next week, the Board of Land and Natural Resources meeting on December 8th. I just wanted to make sure folks understand that what they will be considering at that meeting is actually just the holdover of the current revocable permit. So they won't be acting on the long-term lease
that
KAUC has applied for.
Okay, so that is super important. Can you make that real clear for me for a moment? Go ahead.
Sure. So currently, KIUC is operating our hydros and utilizing some of the water from the North Fork on a revocable permit, which has been in place with the state for years and years and years.
And it's like on month to month, right?
It's actually an annual. So last year in November we went in and we asked for the extension, and then this year in December we're going in. So it's an annual actually. It could be revoked monthly, but we go in annually for the renewal.
Okay.
So this will just be, you know, a renewal of that revocable permit. It's nothing permanent at this point. The consideration of the long-term lease is still pending the completion of the cultural impact studies that we're doing, and also the Commission on Water Resources Management is doing work on some in-stream flow standards. So that all has to come together before they would act on the law.
Okay, so I've been following this, and there's a lot going on. These revocable permits, that ends like 2019. Is that correct?
You know, I don't know for sure. I would have to look into that. I think, as far as I know, it's renewed on a periodic basis. And
I think
then,
there's a
you know,
sundown
within,
on it.
Within mm-hmm. a certain term, and it has been annually for us to go back and for them to consider the extension.
Yeah, so the 65-year lease is not being discussed on Thursday.
It's not being discussed on Thursday. I did look on their website today because I wanted to see, you know, the actual wording on the agenda, and it's not posted yet, but I would guess it'll be posted on the Board of Land and Natural Resources website, you know, in the next couple of days, because they've got that posting, you know, the Sunshine Notice. So it would be, you know, you could look there, too, for the exact wording, but this is just for the holdover and not the long-term 65-year.
Okay, because that's really important. I think there's a number of people who are planning to go to that meeting.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
I got to look at it deeper. So thank you for calling
attention. You might be able to share a link to the actual agenda once it's posted, and I think that would help people better understand what the content is. So
perfect. Well, I sure do appreciate your calling in,
okay.
Beth, and you might have heard give a shout-out saying if you ever want to come in, especially it'd be great to come in about that water battery. I find it's always best to come in before people are rattled. It might be a really good discussion. That was Carol's project.
Yeah, that is a really great project for the West Side, and it's going to be great for all of our members, actually, because of the renewable resources that it'll give to us, you know, to help the co-op move forward. But yes, that's a great project. We definitely want to help people better understand it as we go along, and especially as we go through the EIS process.
Okay, we'll bring somebody up here and let's do a real proactive thing so that people aren't stressed later and everybody's happy.
Okay, appreciate that.
I appreciate your call, Beth.
All right, have a great day.
Okay, thank you. And, you know, I know for you guys, you're not, like, hipped into this, what we're doing with our water battery and all that stuff, but it's actually right along the lines of what your movie's about.
It is absolutely along the lines. It is all of these issues that are affecting the layers of what's happening, whether things are happening in the oil, in the soil, the water, the air. These are all issues that are taking place in the film, things that we're touching on. I wanted to allow.
Yeah, we're going to come back to the helicopter.
Okay.
We're going to come back to the helicopter. And then, pardon me?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So,
let me just feather these things together, though, for a moment for the listener. Because, like, and Carol Bain, who's one of my friends who passed away pretty recently, it was her idea, this water battery. And, you know, people come up with these ideas, like when you're trying to do something perpetual, how you're trying to do something so it's not going to be exhausting things. We just got these new batteries from Elon Musk, which are great, you know, and they're called Tesla batteries. Those are great, and still yet probably somebody's got to go mine lithium or whatever is...
Again, it's another green technology. It's another way to give people resources. One of the things that's the platform of what we're doing in this film that's unique is that we're trying to be innovators and move forward to create a media platform that's green, to give green technology a place to get distribution through a media that's reaching across the globe.
So that's exciting. And so with what Ricardo's doing, which definitely seems like magic, I mean, to think that you could put hydrogen peroxide, which is a relatively innocuous substance, and what, you know, it just puts out water vapor, probably,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. Yeah, the emission is water vapor and oxygen.
Oxygen and
so
water
vapor,
right?
Yeah, you are putting back oxygen in the planet when you fly.
So you're flying, your exhaust is actually good for things, and this is a product that you ideally would like to be making on Kauai'i. You have a real helicopter, and so...
A green, clean, flying machine. There we go.
That's what everybody wants. I'm sure that,
that's,
you know,
what we want. That's what we are putting in the movie as an integration. Think Transformers, but think green.
Well, I've seen this little video. I'm going to put that on my Facebook wall. Like, he's got this really cool personal. Like,
cool.
How much would it cost?
The one seat, it cost about $150,000.
Okay, well, it's not cheap.
The two-seaters... 360,000.
All right.
And the drone, I have a drone also the same size of the one seat, and they can lift 800 pounds, which can be very useful to, like, disaster recovers, you know, bring water, or take people from the tight spots and search and rescue, you know, etc. The drone is 250. But the good thing is, one of the other good things here is that they do not require heavy and costly maintenance, like the beautiful helicopters that we see flying every day. You know, believe I love them. I have nothing against them other than love. I know how complicated it is to make, to maintain, to put in the air.
Yeah, very expensive.
Yes, and the skill of the pilots, etc., the maintenance, the people, everybody involved with it. So this is great. But the Dragonfly you can have in home. You can have a new garage, a new yard. I have four in my yard, and I love them. You know,
and then can you drive them around, or will the FAA get mad at you?
No, they are approved by FAA already.
Okay, so you have to get a... But you can park it in your yard.
Yes, you can. You can require to the FAA a helipad, and you send the design. Have to be like one size and a half of the blades size. And the FAA give you authorization, of course.
But one of the things that's also fascinating about the technology is that we're setting up global distributions from Scandinavia, manufacturing in France, working
Brazil.
In Hawaii and Brazil, where the technology can be available for people to do that.
To make them locally.
To make it, and to also buy them locally across the globe. I mean, it's, again, it's stepping forward.
Right. So if I got this correctly, you've got a really interesting story that has product placement of things that are solutions you're putting in there. Product integration that are solutions. So when people see it and they go, wow, that's amazing, it's not going to be like we were watching the Jetsons when we were little kids. Now we really can use our phones and look at our friends, and people can have their little backyard helicopter,
exactly.
And probably as these get mass-produced, the price will come down.
Yes, of course.
But I think it's beyond just... it's not like buying the sunglasses, although we might have a solar or something special sunglasses. They were welcome to integrate in their more green technology. But what we're talking about is these are things that are good for the earth, that are scientific solutions being invented and created and worked on. And the journey that it takes to make even a movie like this, a feature of this scale, the trials that we've been on. People don't want these things made. They don't want the stories that are fighting gas and oil, these technologies that are cleaning up the water, that are talking about these things. They don't necessarily want these to come out in media and to reach a global scale. But just like the journey of his green helicopter, because it fights with oil and gas, it fights with the normal way people make money. But this film is not setting up to create a battle. It's saying that there are options and alternatives out there. There are solutions that can also work, that we need to be on the forefront of these solutions, and that they exist, but we need to get access to them. And media is a tool to get access to good information, not just bad information, not just fear, but conscious, tools that can help us to move forward.
Awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I saw a little bit about your story, some of this is on the internet. We'll put it on my Facebook wall so listeners can look at it. It sounds like you're telling the story of good people maybe whose ideas have gotten corrupted, and they're trying to straighten it out. And have you had any reaction from real scientists or real people in the industry?
Oh, we are. This is exactly what the impetus for this feature is based upon, the work of scientists whose stories have been integrated, who basically, the plot line is, these are maverick scientists who've been working to bring these out into the world through years of trials, years, billions of dollars, or the expenses, and that the corporations or the partners that they have oftentimes derail the projects before they get to people. So the story is about a maverick scientist, biochemist, who, angry at what has happened to his work after years and trials of bringing the right things to out into the world, to clean water, builds a team of elite eco-scientists to bring balance.
Yeah, so it's a solution-oriented.
Solutions.
So that means Terra Inferma means...
Terra Inferma, the title, Earth. Bravo. It's sick Earth or imbalanced Earth. We all know, so it's a question, and again, it's asking people to participate in a dialogue. It's not, the film is very much an adventure thriller. It's fast-packed, non-stop action, but it's talking about things. And it talks about things from nature to indigenous culture to the accidents that man makes, to the decisions corporations make, to the decisions that governments make working with corporations. And how do we solve those problems that get created? And that's what this team of scientists is put with the task.
Well, that is, I'm really looking forward to seeing the film. Are you able yet to say who your acting talent is, or are you holding back on that?
We're holding back on some of it. I can say that we have big we have, for example, as we're working on indigenous levels, we have big, in terms of incorporating them, we have indigenous actors working in this cast, big cast that people know about. I can't give them the promotions yet, because we want to release these things. We have offers, and we're in discussions with a lot of people who live here in Kauai, with teams of actors who live here on the island. And we're hoping that some of the people that are part of this culture embrace this movie and telling the story, because that's part of what we're trying to say, that this... It's about participating in the world to solve these issues. It's about communities participating in the world. And we've also created, you know, as in this green platform, we've also created we're creating reality-based television shows, which are crimes against the earth, to solve also these issues on different ways. So it's a multi-platform, it's a transmedia structure that we're trying to engage people in.
Yeah. I've just been learning about transmedia, and so that's pretty exciting, because if I understand correctly, transmedia, that means books, products, video games, you know.
That's correct.
Films. It's all different kinds of things so that they can infiltrate, or that's probably the wrong word, but saturate an idea. Like saturating an idea.
Support. Send legs out, send branches out to communicate, because in the world today, as the television or the film model is dying and people are in their phones, young people all
right.
are on their phones, how do we communicate ideas?
An example of transmedia is the little treats you get at the McDonald's Happy Meal, even. You know, like when they put a movie out, they'll put something. Not that that's what your film would be.
But that's like an example.
So, like, the transmedia that would be coming out of this film, of Terra Inferma, would be solutions, right? It'd be
solutions.
Products that are really going to be making a difference. It's not just kitsch to...
It's not just candy.
It's not just candy.
It's actually exactly that. It's green to grow with.
Green to grow with. I've got your friends right here. It looks like they want to say something.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we met Ricardo in Tucson, Arizona, where he was, where he's invented these helicopters, and it's quite amazing to actually see them. In that he's shifted the paradigm of power, where usually a helicopter would have an internal engine, and in this case, it's on the external, and there is no engine. So these solutions that these scientists are coming up with. It's really amazing to see it moving into these movies in this way, and to look at
That's a very good point. Thank you. And we make it easy to fly also, because we do not have torque. We don't have engine, gears, belts, and all gizmos and hydraulic systems, and that is very complex, right? We don't have torque, so you can pilot it with a single hand. You don't have pedals. Too is a very friendly to learn. You can learn to fly in 8 hours, and you don't need a license also to fly them, because they are included in the LSA, what is light sport aircraft, and the FAA do not require you go to school, very expensive to learn how pilot them. Go ahead, please.
Well, just the excitement of meeting someone like this who's shifted that paradigm of looking at these established vehicles and really shifting the paradigm of how power is oriented around it, and just to be around in the presence of someone like this, I think is a lot of what Daryl's trying to establish in this movie too, is just these dynamic minds that we have in our community, and how how they can further our evolution is really, really amazing. Yeah.
And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea with Jake and Felicia Kwai Soapbox, and we are discussing both Dragonfly helicopters and Terra Inferma, the film, and a film that is really celebrating green technologies in an action adventure, right? An action adventure where the violence is about nonviolence, right?
It's more that what this feature brings, I think, one of the things that this feature brings that's, I think, unique is we're in a dialogue right now across media about the abuse, you know, all the scandals about the abuse of women. But what about the abuse of the earth? What about the story about how long the earth has been abused, and that story has not been told?
That's our mother.
And that's correct. And so the violence in this, there, it's an, as we keep saying, it's an adventure thriller, it's a family movie, but the violence that you're really seeing in this movie is the violence to the earth, which is a change. We're all sort of, I think, numb to just seeing violence in general, hearing about violence, but this is a different kind of violence, not the way you usually see it. So again, it's about giving power to the earth, but also to the people who are solving the problems on the earth.
Yeah, I was very impressed when I read this script. I met Daryl. And when I read the script, this is part of my life. This is some struggle that I have passed
yourself
through.
Yeah, right.
Myself, to, you know, go from the drawing board to make the parts, to assemble it, to find the right people to help, and etc. So I have an identification with exactly what she's doing.
And it sounds like this film is going to be on Kauai. I hear a little bit of an international tone to both of your lives. Is this taking an international look, or is it just looking at Hawaii?
This film is set between North America and Asia, and one of the reasons that we scouted New Mexico, we scouted China, we scouted Canada, and we landed in Hawaii because we found the ability to shoot this international film in one location that was a cross section of cultures, and also
we've got a lot of microclimates too,
with the stunning natural, so microclimates, how many, 32 I think it is, and the stunning landscapes of nature, but also the culture that the intersections are here in Hawaii was a unique thing. We couldn't find that in New Mexico. We couldn't find it in Canada. But we found it here. We scouted China. We found it all in one world here, which made it a unique place to bring this project to. And because there's, you know, Hawaii has done a great job with building a rebate structure to make it a great place to film and produce a movie and to bring in international cast, that has really enabled us to bring this feature here.
And who's handling the hiring? Like, because people might be listening and they might be wanting to, you know, a lot of times when films come, it's kind of good for the economy and people get hired kind of up and around. I don't know if you're doing any extras or if you're doing any parts.
There'll be casting. There are certainly...
Is there jobs? Like
there's union, but there's certainly... Everything will be integrated with... There'll be casting calls. There'll be all sorts of things. We're going to bring in keys, but we will also be bringing in and integrating everyone here's on the ground and available to work. And a lot of times we're an independent feature, which isn't as big as those big studio features that come in.
So
we have to fight. We have to get good crews. So we definitely will be offering jobs to lots of locals. And
because this is a medium-sized budget, right?
Well,
how big's the budget, can I ask?
It's 20 million plus.
20 million plus. Okay, so that's a pretty good sized budget, and
it's not a studio. We're not a $100 million studio.
It's not,
it's a big feature for an independent, and again, one of the things we do work to do, and we are, is to integrate what's here on the ground. We've already got that in the way in which we've created the budget to work here in Hawaii, as well as that a lot of what we've done also is we've talked about giving back some of the resources to the nonprofits that are here. We've integrated, when we've come here and we've scouted, we found out issues about certain things which we've incorporated. We've incorporated things like the monk seals. We've incorporated issues we discovered to taking place and brought them into the story. So, you know, we're very receptive to the issues that are here on the islands because it's a microcosm of what's going on in the world.
And then so what we started the show with and that we're going to I'm expecting a caller pretty soon about we started talking about war. Does the film address war?
No, we're not. There's enough out there. The War of the Earth. We're certainly not. This film is not taking on the
wars. But war is it's environmentally damaging.
Yeah,
it's more an environmentally damaging industry, for
it's
sure.
It's more about it's a chronicling the battle between nature, man, corporation, and government. That's the battle. That's the war. That's the story.
That's the story. And
the
it's
levels
set
of the story.
In the modern time with, you know, the suggestion in there of very real products like Ricardo's Dragonfly helicopter.
Or air, or water filters.
Or water filters.
Or one cell technology which helps clean up, you know, things that like oil spills or even disease, ways to clean water that has been contaminated by after events like oil and fracking and these kinds of things and spills, that accidents that happen. So it's give, and we're bringing on new partners all the time, new different kinds of technology. There's technology of green ATVs. There's all kinds of, you know, whether there's all levels of whether it's as simple as a kind of material, a synthetic, the car, all of those kinds of technologies are things that we're integrating into this story.
That's wonderful. And I believe I have a planned guest. We can come back to this in a little bit. John, are you there?
Hi, Felicia. This is John Lettman.
Hey, John. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate what you're going to have an event, I believe, in a week and a half, maybe?
That's correct. On December 7th.
So that's a Thursday.
Thursday,
a week from Thursday.
Correct. At KCC, Kauai Community College, at the One Stop Center, there's going to be a presentation offered by KCC history professor Mark Umbrello and myself. We're going to be presenting what we're calling Korea in Context, Past and Present. Mark Umbrello, the professor, will be talking about the colonial history in the Korean Peninsula. He'll be talking probably about half an hour, and then I'll be following him, speaking for about half an hour, talking about the militarized state of the Korean Peninsula today, and talking about the South Korean resistance to war and the peace movement.
So that is powerful. And have you spent time there? You go there, right? And I know you write for some pretty strong independent publications.
Yeah, I took a trip to South Korea in May. I was there for about 10 days, and I traveled to several places to take a look at. One was a large U.S. military base. I also went out to a place on Jeju Island where there's a Korean, it's a contested South Korean base that the U.S. has started to visit, if not use. And I also went to a rural part of the southern part of South Korea called Songju, which is where it's been in the news a lot. You may have heard of it. That's where the THAAD missile, anti-missile defense system, was forcibly deployed by the U.S. And South Korea against the wishes of the people in the area. And then I went up to the demilitarized zone, the DMZ, the border of North and South Korea.
Well, have you been paying attention to the news today?
Sure, of course. It was the first ballistic missile test in, I think, 74 days. There'd been a lull since September, and then it was the highest test. And there's, of course, a lot of angst and a lot of excitement and a lot of sometimes hyperbole, you could call it, over what this means. It's a game changer, it's this, it's that. But so these are some of the issues that Mark and I are going to be addressing at this event at KCC on Thursday, December 7th.
So how do you interpret what happened today? Because I looked at it, but I don't have enough background to know really. You know, I have trouble actually believing even the New York Times and CNN. I know I'm supposed to, but I see it. And I don't know how to process it.
There was another ICBM test. I think it was called a Hwangsan. It's maybe a new type of missile that was tested, launched at night in the direction of Japan, entered the Japanese exclusive economic zone, so close to northern Japan, close to the island of Honshu. And Trump responded very briefly, kind of rather subdued. He said, "We'll take care of it." He's kind of repeating. I think he's perhaps not really sure what to do. But we're in a very dangerous situation, which obviously I don't need to point out. Everybody knows that. But the question is, how long are we going to let this go on, and what are we going to do? So these are some of the questions that we'll be talking about. But yeah, this is something which, you know, every time there's another test, every time the U.S. and South Korea continue with more war games, which are scheduled, the next ones are scheduled during the Olympics.
Really?
Every time this happens, we're pushing ourselves into a corner, and we're pushing North Korea into a corner where the chance for miscalculation or somebody making a mistake increases. And this is not a game that anybody can afford to play.
So, I'm sorry, I kind of lost my thought there for a second. When you are looking at this, when you're at the meeting, at the presentation, are you going to allow for a discussion then, so people can ask questions and there'll be a pretty vigorous discussion after the presentations?
Yeah, I hope that's what will happen. I think, you know, it is going to be from 6 to 8 o'clock on Thursday, December 7th, and so we want to keep Mark's presentation fairly short and my presentation also fairly short, and leave enough time where people can ask questions. There can be back and forth exchange, discussion, and we also will have some food and drink there. So we hope people will come and enjoy. So it's going to be hopefully an enjoyable event where people can you know, have a really lively discussion. Yeah, it's not just going to be a long talk.
Have you invited the people out from the base?
No. Do you have their number?
Yeah. But I'm not going to put it on the air. But yeah, like you should.
I've been trying to get in touch with Captain
Vinny
Johnson.
Yeah.
Captain
Vinny
Johnson.
Yeah.
I've been trying to get in touch with them since April or March, emailing and waiting for a response, and
okay.
I haven't gotten one.
Well, I can give it a call.
Yeah,
are you down
like
with
to,
that?
I'd
I mean,
like
do,
to,
am I welcome to invite him? Because
please do. Anybody's welcome. This is a public event. We'd love to see, you know, our friends from PMRF come out. We'd love to see the county council, the mayor, you know,
okay.
whoever is interested in these issues, which we can, you know, we can all agree that this is something that we're definitely being impacted by. We're going to see that on Friday when they start doing the air raid siren tests.
Yes, they're going to start doing air raid siren tests that have to do with nuclear war. I find the base guys are actually pretty friendly to having community discussion, and very often they, you know, listen to this show.
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
And so if they are listening right now, you know, hear that you're invited because...
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Give me a call. I've been waiting.
Okay, because I find that it's always best to have, you know, a range of perspectives on the discussion. So I'll give a call. I'll look. I think you have a poster. I'll send a copy of the poster and see if they want to come, because that would certainly be good. And my experience is that they're generally very willing to talk to KCR anyway. So hopefully we can have the Navy out there as well, so that we can have a robust
welcome.
Conversation.
We'll, like I said, we'll have some food and drink, so nobody's going to leave hungry.
Okay. Well, John, thank you for all the work that you do, and I know your intention is to work for peace, and that you are very actively involved in your reporting. It's not a thin layer of knowledge in what you have there. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me on, and I hope to see you on Thursday, December 7th at KCC.
And you will, and I might be there with a camera.
Yeah, please bring it. Bring
okay.
the folks from PMRF. Aloha.
Okay, aloha. And Jazz with John will be up at the top of the hour. So I am coming back to my people here. And then less as filmmakers and then just as people who obviously are on the same mindset. It seems like to me when you're making a film about, I want to call it social and environmental justice, because environmental justice is social justice. Typically, when the environment is destroyed, it impacts most greatly the people who least can get it.
One of the things I wanted to mention, I was brought up as a student of Uncle Ned Swigert. He grew up in wigwams on the mainland, and he was my teacher. And when I met Ricardo, one of the things that struck me about his helicopter is it works with Mother Earth. Uncle Ned taught us to read the air, to work with the water, to care for Mother Earth. He started a major Native American institute for the people, for the Native people. And when I met Ricardo, this is what his helicopter does.
Okay. I'm just pointing to you to project your voice.
Okay. It actually works. Thank you. It works with the centripetal and centrifugal forces. It works with the way that the ergonomics of the air, how it lives. And so it doesn't disturb the creatures of the air or the earth when it flies and when it lands.
Wow. So I'm saying Ricardo, but is it Ricardo?
Ricardo. Uh-huh.
Okay, because you are from Brazil?
Yes, I'm born in Brazil, northeast of Brazil. And,
his mother's from the Amazon.
Yeah, my mother born in Amazonas and stayed in the jungle till she was 15 years old. So she imprinted on myself the nature and things. And I want to say something here that was very, very type funny. When I was a kid, like 8, 9 years old, I used to go and catch dragonfly and bring it to her, and she put a string on the tail and give me to fly. And then I believe that was my first lessons about aerodynamics and flies, right? So years passing, and then I got in aviation, and then here's the dragonfly, the mechanical dragonfly.
Well, that is a very sweet story. I was able to spend a few weeks in the Amazon before. Have you ever heard that expression, you're never bored in the Amazon? You know, there's so much life and so much action
so
in
much,
every
yes,
moment.
Yes.
And I would say for me, that was a life-changing event to
like,
be there.
Like for me, it's a life change coming to Kauai.
Yeah.
When I see around with the waterfowls and the green, the luxury of nature here, you know, I thought, well, that is the best place to launch the dragonfly, launch that ecological helicopter.
Yes, launch it here.
Yes, and I want to bring them to here and find a property here to install assembly line, manufacture them here in Kauai.
Okay, well, we'll have to hook you up with the people that might make that be a reality.
I would love to.
So it sounds like some really great things that you guys are doing. I'm really happy that, the goal is to bring some blessings to this island. And as what mm-hmm. we were seeing a little bit with the earlier guests, Vladimir Orlov and some of the others, is that on Kauai, even though we're just this one little place out in the middle of the ocean,
very special.
So many special things happen. This is like a magnet for people who care.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a culture, our host culture, our people of the Polynesian ancestry. They were masters of knowing how to do a lot with a very little, and because of the deep isolation in these whole chains of islands in the ocean,
exactly.
is to just not destroy the environment. Like, environmental awareness was the very center of their laws, their customs, their way of being, and so it's poetic and appropriate
mm-hmm.
that these kind of messages emanate from Kauai.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I think so. I think that the ability to bring this project here and to have it produced in this incredible, beautiful
paradise
of nature, mm-hmm. but also, again, the synthesis of cultures, the indigenous world, the Asian world, a place where all of these cultures are, have a history as well, is part of the power of bringing a project like this here. It resonates for us as a team that's bringing these things in. And again, we are trying to work with the community to bring benefits through the production that we can do as an independent production rather than a studio feature, because we can make decisions about those kinds of things with the communities working with us as well.
Many of the filmmakers who've made movies here have come away with something much, much more extraordinary than they had anticipated when they first came. I'm sure it works that way when you make a film anywhere, but it's something that seems to be remarked on a lot, is that it
evolves.
There's
always a reciprocity, but yes.
So if people want to see about the film, I know your business is called Green Womb Productions.
No, that's the mother company.
That's the mother company.
Really, as it's a feature film, there will start to be, as we start to make the film here, as we're going in production, as we're wrapping up what we're doing now with the casting, there's processes. And we've been through, as we said, as I talked about with the scientists, we also, as a production, we've been through battle in making this film.
Mm-hmm.
We were shut down by corporation. We were shut down by the government. We've been through a battle to make this because of the stories that we're telling, although we fictionalize them. So the journey to bring this film into being here in this community is also quite an endeavor.
Is there a website people can look at?
There's a Terran Firma of the movie, you'll see more links coming out. We have a transmedia campaign that will start Again, we go into production this spring, winter into spring, and there will start to be a campaign. There's a there are links on it. You can look for Terrain Firme, the movie.
T E R R A I N F E R M A in Spanish, sick earth.
Right. Basically, the resonance is that's what we're sitting on is a sick earth.
Okay, and then
imbalanced earth.
Imbalanced earth. When I use that word inferma, I say, oh, yes, I'm saying I don't feel well. That's what it sounds like to me. So, Ricardo, I'll say it more correctly. If people wanted to see about the Dragonfly helicopter, they would go to avimech.com, AVIMECH.com.
Uh-huh.
Like aviation mechanical, maybe AVIMECH.com. Mm-hmm. Congratulations on something that is almost beyond imagining.
Thank you.
Personal helicopter running on, hydrogen peroxide that emits as exhaust water and oxygen.
And works with the earth. It'll change consciousness. It'll change consciousness.
Green Moon Productions, which is the mother company, if you have other green technologies that you think are interesting to us, we are very much interested in learning about them. You can, again, Green Womb, as in the Earth Mother's place where everything comes from. So, again, it is a call to action for all of you with technology. We're working to bring you also into our fold.
And what might seem kind of ordinary, our power cooperative, KIUC, Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, we are, on a sunny day, you know, we are carrying our whole load on sun. And we are trying to go towards almost 90% renewable. You know, we have a 50%. We are so ahead of our goals. We're doing really well. And so, you know, we have a biofuels plant. So we take, you know, we got a lot of green waste, and we use trees that are considered problematic. I think they're beautiful, but they're invasive trees, and they grow fast. So we're using those to replace oils. And then I know everything has an impact, so I've got to be careful in being okay about this water storage battery. You know, people might tell me where it's wrong. But the water storage battery is also another thing that's kind of cool, you know, and won't that easily have broken parts, best I can tell. So thank you, Jake.
Thank you.
And Michael and?
Heidi.
Mahalo. Okay.
Mahalo.
All right. Daryl Lee?
Doriel. Mahalo. Aloha to all of you.
Doriel. So thank you so much, and Ricardo.
Thank you.
All right, so we've got actually multiple language speakers in here, too. So forgive my limit with English.
Before we go, I want to say thanks for all beautiful smile that crossed my eyes in my stay here. You know, I'm the sympathy of the people in the island is like is a family. It's all together. I love you when you get here, and I will be here to stay.
Thank you. And so for those of us less language, sympathy is really means like kindness.
Yes.
Kindness when you take it into Latin languages. So thank you so much. So coming up next is Jazz with John, and first we're going to hear the County Council report.